Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard.
And me, Pam Caldwell.
Today, we've just come off a really amazing podcast and Pam and I are definitely feeling extremely inspired and we can't wait to share this one with you today. We have just sat down with Jodine Woolman and Alexis Aaron. They are the co-founders of Sorted, which is an online app that basically is grabbing all of the amazing retailers, pulling it into one place so you can go and shop on one app, purchase what you want across multiple different retail chains and buy and have it delivered. I mean, the idea of it is so phenomenal, so time consuming, so innovative. Mm-hmm. And we have literally just heard their journey from how it became an idea to now going through two funding rounds. And it was just a really inspiring conversation, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was beautiful. And I think expect to be fired up when the point around the VC funding, like we all know that the stats around that are absolutely disgusting. And they shared some really vulnerable moments that they had along that journey, along with some really good advice for people that are actually embarking on that journey. So that's a fantastic part of the episode. And I just love the fact that they are bringing to the fore about what a career in tech can look like, and that you can blindly be in a career in tech and not even realize it until you're a few months into the journey.
100%. And the fact they've never written a line of code in their life, yet they're running a tech company. Look, it's just so many amazing sort of takeaways from this. And I think that, yeah, definitely the VC point really stood out for me. And just how they kept on hearing no, but they kept on going. They kept on believing in themselves. They stayed motivated. They kept their mindset strong. And how they had each other, which is something I know Pam and I can definitely relate to. Because whenever Pam has a moment or I have a moment, like, we really are there for each other, bringing each other up, you know, just checking in, making sure that we're both okay. And I could see that that's exactly what they do for each other as well. So the power of your work bestie, whether that's, you know, in your, you know, working life, running a business, is really, really important. And very grateful for you, Pam, to have you in my life,
because
you know, this journey definitely wouldn't be as fun without you.
No, so and, you know, God help anyone that's around us when we're both simultaneously having those moments.
Always been a couple of them this week. But look, really enjoy today's episode. I hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe. It really does help this podcast grow. Share it on your socials and let us know what your biggest takeaway was. And enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we empower women with all the tools they need to succeed across life, business and career. We'll bring inspiring stories and practical advice from CEOs, founders and women who are achieving incredible things. So join us and let's shape our futures together. Jodine and Alexis, welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast. It's a real honor to have you both here today. Can you start with a little bit of an introduction into you both, your journey, and we get on to your very excited business once we've heard about your personal journey. So over to you both. Great to have you here today. Who wants to go first?
Yeah, I'll go. Thank you so much for having us. Yeah, as I said, I'm Alexis and this is Joe. We are the co-founders of Sorted. Really, Sorted is the baby and brainchild of a problem that we were experiencing ourselves. It's a COVID baby. 2.5 years ago, we were having a conversation about, you know, how difficult we found it to online shop, keep track of the different options, decide what we wanted to buy. You know, we're childhood friends and we'd been talking about going to the weddings we were invited to and the birthday parties, and we just had this conversation and we were like, why is it so difficult to do this? And it made us really go deep down into the real problem, which is with so many options and retailers out there, how on earth are you supposed to decide what to buy and keep track of all the options out there? And so Sorted is something very close to our hearts. We started this as a bit of a passion project. We were both working full-time jobs and working on Sorted part-time. At the time, it was called Voila. And we took out loans and built an MVP and grew that to 500 users, really just to validate that we were onto something. And when we felt that we could take this further. We quit our jobs, we joined an accelerator program, and really went down to the basics of what does it take to create a startup. Fast forward nearly 12 months, we have raised two rounds of seed funding. We've launched our product, which is still in the MVP stages, but we're building a really great community of like-minded shoppers around us. And, you know, we've got so much more to go.
Awesome. I'm really excited to get into Sorted, because I think it is solving a really big issue. And like I said to you before we started this conversation, I experienced it over the weekend. And, you know, online shopping should be a joy. But to be quite honest with you, I was flicking back one window, another window was open, and I was just getting quite confused about what I was doing and what I was buying. So I love that it's this streamlined process that you're creating. So I really want to go into that. But before we go down that path, because there's so much I want to talk to you, amazing girls, about, especially like the whole funding round. That's really something that we have spoken a lot about on this podcast, about the lack of females getting funded in business. So that's a whole topic in itself. But before we go into that, I'd love to sort of know, you know, when did you both decide to come together and work together? Because like Pam and I, like I'm sure it's quite a similar story. We've known each other for many, many years now. Picking a co-founder is really, really important. So important, in fact. And you see a lot of people get it very wrong. When did you both decide that this was like the match and that you wanted to do this together? And what's that journey been like, sort of working with your, you know, your bestie, basically, and building this business? What's that been like for you both?
Yeah, well, I mean, as you said, we are best friends. So we had that layer of trust and a really strong relationship before we started the business. But I think for us, it really happened very organically. I was at Alexis's house. I opened her computer and there were 10,000 tabs open on her screen. And we both looked at each other and we were like, what is that about? And so it snowballed into working together. We didn't reach out to each other and say, hey, let's start a business. This really happened organically. But I would say we are very close and have always been, but talk to us in 2 years, it might not be the case.
Oh my gosh, well, that's so funny.
We never really gave it thought. It had just happened really naturally. But I think the more ingrained we get into the startup community and meet other founders and get to know other teams, the more we realize how important it is that you have that really trusting relationship with your co-founder. You know, we heard someone speak last year and they mentioned that, you know, getting into a co-founding relationship is longer than a marriage. Statistically, you're in it for longer. So, you know, you really have to have a really strong foundation. You have to trust each other. In our circumstance, it really just happened naturally. But, you know, anyone getting into a co-founding relationship, you really have to be on the same page. You have to trust each other. You have to talk about the difficult things. We had to talk about the difficult things. And you're in it for the long haul together. So we're very grateful to have each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel as though you've touched upon some really beautiful points then, right? Because I think there's a lot of women out there that absolutely love the idea of having a business bestie. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you see a lot on Instagram at the moment or TikTok, whatever platform you use, and it shows the sort of highlight reel of having a best friend and business partner, and it does all look so much fun. I think the realities of business is that it can very much be a roller coaster, and I so agree with you both that having those solid foundations of trust is so important. But one thing that Georgie and I have found is that matching each other in terms of work ethic is also so important, because if you were in a business partnership and you had one that was really pulling their weight and the other was potentially not coming from a similar mindset when it comes to work ethic and what needs done to build a business, things would quickly fall apart. And another sort of piece of the puzzle that I think is really important is really coming from a place of understanding in terms of what each other's definition of success is. What would your advice be to entrepreneurs or individuals that are out there at the moment that that basically have an idea and want to embark on this journey, but they want to do it with someone and they're out and they're potentially looking for a co-founder or looking for a business partner. What would you recommend would be like the sort of the route to go down, or would be the sort of key fundamentals that you feel are so important for a successful business partnership?
Sure. I mean, look, not everyone is as lucky as Jordine and I and the two of you, where you can work with someone who you have a really strong background with. Not everyone has a conversation with their best friend and starts a business, but there are so many people out there who are interested in entrepreneurship. There's so many interesting people out there with skill sets that we can all tap into. I think what's really important is if you are interested in getting into entrepreneurship, first of all, you need to take the risk, you need to go after it. You have to trust your gut if you're onto something. And then you've got to go out and meet people. You know, there's various programs out there where you can meet co-founders. Antler is one of those programs, which is an early stage startup accelerator type program where you can meet co-founders. But also there's Sydney startups, there's LinkedIn communities. There's events in, you know, Sydney CBD, or, and I'm sure that's the case in most other local Australian cities. You just gotta put yourself out there. You gotta meet whoever you can. You've gotta ask the questions. You've gotta network. And when you know, and when you have that connection with someone, you'll know. You know, you've just gotta put yourself out there, because not everyone will have that friend, as I said, but you're also good enough for somebody else. Like, there's somebody for everybody. You just gotta give it a crack and meet whoever you can.
Absolutely. It's kind of like the analogy Alexa said before. You're gonna be in bed with this person, you're gonna marry this person. It's kind of like speed dating. Treat it like a date. Get to know them on a deeper level. And if you don't want to spend the next 5 years with this person, they're not the right person to go into business with.
That is so key, right? And I think what's been really important for Georgie and I is that we laugh easy. And I think that business can be so serious and it can get incredibly stressful, but you need to be able to laugh at yourself. You need to be able to laugh when stuff goes wrong. So for me, if I was choosing a business partner, like, humor would honestly be one of my key things that I would be looking for. I'd be like, do you laugh easy? Because we need to be able to to have a little bit of a release. And it's all about enjoying the journey as well, isn't it? But yeah, we often joke, because Georgie's literally got access to my entire life. Like, she knows like my bank detail logins and everything. She's just like,
house keys. I mean, honestly,
did you put that Botox on the credit card last night?
true story.
Yeah, you know, it's also about finding complementary skill sets as well. Like, you know, you can have your prerequisites, which is like, do you have a sense of humor? Do you take yourself too seriously? Can we laugh? Can we get along? Things like that. But then it's also about, like, what do I have that I could bring to the table? And what do you have that could potentially, you know, complement my skill sets? It's really important to balance each other out. You know, with Jordine and I, we have very different strengths and weaknesses, and Joe picks me up where I'm down and vice versa. And that's really, really important in a co-founding relationship, because when you can't always have the same opinion, these things are really important. You need to, you know, kind of butt heads in some ways so that you can get a well-rounded or have a well-rounded approach on every task that you tackle and every problem that you face. So diverse and complementary skill sets is essential. You can't come from the same background, from the same job, in the same role, with the same skill sets, and expect to have, you know, a holistic understanding of what it takes to run a business.
100%.
Because, yeah, you can't know everything. And so I think that's really important.
Yeah, 100%. I think you've made some really, really valid points there. And hopefully everyone that's listening that, you know, is thinking about starting a business and trying to find a co-founder, I think you've now got some real good tangible takeaways to think about. But look, going back to the beginnings, I think it's always really good to reflect on, you know, those those tough sort of like startup grind, you know, I'm sure you're kind of still in it. I know Pam and I still feel like we're in it 5 years on. But like, what was that like for you? Like, when was like the moment for you that you decided to quit your jobs and go all in this? Like, and what was the journey like from, I guess, working like a Monday to Friday, you know, typical job, and then having this business on the side? Like, because I think a lot of people, again, like always see sort of that top of the iceberg, but they don't see what goes on to get even that point that you're at now. So what's that journey been like from right at that beginning phase to where you are today?
So I think for us, we didn't have a choice to quit our jobs and do this. We were working on this part-time. I mean, there was a stage where I was working 7 days a week. I came from a law background, that's working at the firm, working with Joe, but we weren't moving the needle enough on Sorted to really take this further. And Joe sat me down one day and said, if we don't do something about this, if we don't start hustling, if we don't start pushing, then what is this all for? And so we were like, okay, what can we do to change things? Do we need to quit our jobs? Do we need to go to a program? Do we need to bring on another co-founder? Like, what do we need to do? And we really set targets for ourselves. This is beginning of last year. And we set a goal. I said, okay, I'm quitting my job in April. Joe said, okay, we'll do the same. And it was just about going all in. It was really, really difficult at first. You can't do everything. I feel like a really good way to start, you know, your journey in entrepreneurship is to go part-time to really, you know, see if there's an opportunity here. But as soon as you feel in your gut that it's right, you've got to run with it. And so we just sat each other down and were like, are we doing this? Like,
let's go.
And it's definitely not been an easy ride. It was really hard to balance everything. A lot of the time things got pushed aside when they shouldn't have. And so I'm really glad Joe pushed us in the beginning of last year to do it, because we would never have been where we are had we had stayed even a month longer in our full-time positions.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious about this, because we often talk to people about career pivots and how, regardless of what your background is, you have over the years, whether that be from like university and the roles that you've been in, you gain so many fundamental skill sets that can be easily transferable into other roles. And I truly believe that. And I can imagine from coming from a legal background, I just think that even the intensity with what you work at in that type of profession can really, you know, set you up for success regardless of what you want to do in the future. When you guys were making that decision, did you stop to think for a second that what you were doing was actually embarking on a career in tech? So I know the fundamental business idea is like e-commerce, right? But ultimately, everything that you are doing with Sorted is underpinned by technology. You're building an app, all the payment platforms, like everything you're doing is online. How did you sort of work through that in your head? Or did you even think at the time, we are launching a tech business and that is not the background we come from?
Right. I think we woke up like 2 months after we had started the journey and we were like, hey, are we like women in tech? Like, is that... I remember my dad sitting me down when we first started and he's like, okay, so this is a tech company. You're going to learn how to code, right? And I was like, probably not. No, mm-hmm. That will take me 20 years. So I think there's something to say. There's something to say in that even if you're not from the right background or you don't have the certain skill sets that you think you need to go into tech, you do. As you said before, all experiences are life experiences. You pick things up as you go. And I think we didn't really think about it going into it.
Yeah, and that's not to say we get on the tools and code. Like, absolutely not. I think the biggest key to a successful startup is surrounding yourself with the right people and acknowledging your gaps and where they lie. So, you know, Joe and I do what we can to upskill and to learn and to engage in really high level conversations about, you know, our tech stack and what we're doing and the product roadmap. But even though you pick up these life skills and skills are transferable, like, we can't code, like, fact, right? So we've put a lot of emphasis of surrounding ourselves with the right people We have amazing mentors. We have amazing advisors. We have a really strong team, and we all pick each other up where, you know, the gaps are. And particularly now, we're in the stage of our business where we're outlining our org chart. You know, what does our team look like in 3 months and 3 years from now? So yes, you're right. You can come from any background and make it work, so long as you know you have the grit and the drive to, like, you know, take this to where it needs to go. But it's also about acknowledging your gaps, acknowledging your weaknesses, and surrounding yourself with the right people to make your vision come to life.
Amazing. And this is exactly what Georgie and I preach constantly. To be a woman in tech, you do not have to be sitting writing lines of code. I've been in tech for 16 years, never written a line of code once. In fact, I need help to, like, turn on my computer, but that's another story. But it's such an important message, right, to be involved in a tech business. There's so many different roles that you can slot into and add value to the growth and scaling of any business. And that can come from, like, many different facets. So, like, problem solving, you know, all these softer skills that you can absolutely bring to the table, you know, designing solutions, like identifying problems, like the analysis of business cases, like all these skill sets that so many people could bring to the table. But a lot of people are scared to start because they feel that in order to start a tech business that they need to have an understanding of the technologies, and it's quite simply not true.
Absolutely. I can give you an example of how it works in our team, right? So Joe comes from a film and TV and theatre film production background, and I come from a legal background. So, okay, we're not writing our lines of code, but my skill set in problem solving, because that's the entire, like, being a lawyer, that's all that it's about. Analyzing and being a problem solver. And Jodine is the biggest operator I know. She makes absolutely everything happen. And so between the two of us, we can problem solve when it comes to the product roadmap, and we can schedule the product roadmap, and we can manage our developers, and we can make sure that everything's on track. That's what we bring to the table. And then we hire our project manager, and we hire our backend developer, and we work with them to bring them onto the team to make, you know, and all together we make a well-oiled machine. And that's just, you know, the way it's been working for us, and we wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I think it's also important for people to know that when you are looking for your development team, you need to surround yourself with people that don't care if you're asking silly questions, don't care how maybe personable you might sound, because some or unprofessional you might sound in that meeting, because we're just trying to do the same thing. We've got the same goal, and that to make this business a success. So definitely for people that understand that you aren't from a technical background.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Pam and I have been dealing with developers and all techie people for our whole career. So we totally get it. And often we're asking questions like, right, can you explain that to me? But a lot of people are really happy just to sort of, like, you know, talk about what they do and share their knowledge. And I think, like, you often get people that are really excited just to say, this is how it works and this is why it works. So I think, you know, it's like not being afraid to ask the silly questions, because a lot of people are so happy and want to answer them because they're really excited and passionate about what they do. But I'd love to talk now about funding, because on this podcast, we've spoken to a couple of women who work in the VC sector. We've spoken to a lot of, like, you know, women who have started to, who have founded their own companies, what they've been through. And from what we've heard, it was a very challenging process, and they were meeting a lot of VCs, going to a lot of meetings and hearing this constant word no, but they kept on going, they kept on going, they kept on going. So what's your journey been like raising capital? And congratulations, by the way. I absolutely love hearing this because it's like a win for all women. So what was the journey like raising capital for Sorted?
So as I said, our journey with Sorted started 2.5 years ago. And from the get-go, we attempted to raise funding. We spoke to VCs, we spoke to family offices. We got a lot of, I don't really think that's a problem. You know, when you're fundraising and you're putting a pitch deck together, there's a formula that you follow. You know, you've got problem, solution, you know, product, market opportunity. And we get to the problem and people are just like, I don't really get it. And so, you know, what I've seen is like women are really good at tapping into niche markets or niche problems, but those are often overlooked by like the mainstream business world or the mainstream VC world, which tends to be like a bit more macho. And so, you know, it took us 2 years really, because our fundraising, the success of our fundraising really only began in middle of last year, June, July last year. So after 2 years of meeting with everyone we could, we finally got there. But it was a journey. I mean, you know, preventative questions are a really big thing. And so women tend to get more negative facing questions from VCs than, you know, encouraging questions. For example, like instead of asking, you know, what's your business model, women tend to get asked, well, when are you going to make money? Or when are you going to break even? And so we found that we were getting a lot of preventative questions, and we really had to train ourselves to reframe those. The biggest example is we were at a VC pitch last year, and someone said to us, well, what's to stop two men in the UK from copying your idea? And we were so thrown. We were really upset. We didn't answer very well because we had no idea what to say. It was like very much like we didn't know what to say. But then, you know, when we were debriefing, we really realized that that question was about, you know, our moat and our defensibility. So instead of asking us, you know, like, what can you say about your defensibility? We were asked a question that was like really offensive and quite sexist. So that was really hard, but I think it really pushed us from that moment. We changed gears. This was about, okay, what is the root of the question people are asking us? How can we have conviction in ourselves as founders? We need to start getting people to take us seriously. And as soon as that happened, people started to see the change in us. We were confident. Mm-hmm. We tackled every question, and we kept going. And we really, our biggest driver of succeeding in our fundraising was that people saw our grit, our hustle. People were like, we can see you've been at this for 2.5 years. You haven't given up. Mm-hmm. I'm getting to know you. I like you as a person. I feel like you, whatever it is that you do, you're going to succeed. And I think, unfortunately, people don't take women seriously sometimes, particularly in the BC world, and access to funding is nowhere near as much as men. But they take you seriously when you take yourself seriously. And that takes a lot of time. At least in our case, took us 2.5 years to get confident enough to be like, hang on, we actually know what we're doing. Like, you listen to what we have to say. And
I think also something that aided in our success with our fundraising round was that we weren't just selling an idea. We had gone out, we had bootstrapped an MVP product, we had users, we validated it in a small percentage, and that really gave them confidence in our work and hustle, as Lex said.
Yeah, we have more barriers to overcome as female founders, where, you know, a lot of other startups can get funding just based on an idea and like a bit of research.
As snazzy pitch deck.
Yeah. And we had to prove ourselves a bit more, which sucks, but we did work to make that happen. So you just can't give up. As you said, all the other people that you've spoken to, like, as long as you keep going, like, don't give up, because like it will happen for you. Even if you are part of that very small percentage of female founders that get funding, like, the more people who try, the more people who keep going, like, we can bring that number up. Mm.
I actually hate that we actually have to have these conversations, but we do, because very unfortunately, like, these are the realities. And thank you so much for being very vulnerable and actually sharing some real shit that you had to go through in order to secure the funding. I read a stat that only 3% of total VC capital went to all women-funded startups in 2022. I mean, that is just so disgusting. It's so poor. And the barriers to entry to the VC funding are just it is ultimately because it's so male dominated at the top, and it's mm-hmm. like you've got the men that are at the top that are responsible for allocating the funding that have absolutely no idea about what a female consumer is looking for. Mm-hmm. So you know, you touched beautifully on the point that they do not understand the mm-hmm. problem that you are trying to solve, mm-hmm. you know, and that's why trying to aim to get more female VCs in a position of power mm-hmm. is just so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And throw in the fact that getting funding for a consumer facing business is near to impossible these days, because it's understandably, it's a very, you know, it's not a SaaS company here. You don't need to have 10 to start making money. Consumer is really difficult. But, you know, as the founders, we feel like we have a really, really strong connection to our customer base. And that's something that you just can't replicate. You know, those two men in the UK, had we had our time over again, we would have spoken about that. You know, we understand our customer. Like, consumer is difficult, but we have what it takes to communicate with them. And that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm.
I love that. And mm-hmm. it's just about, it's like about just standing in your own strength and having mm-hmm. complete belief and conviction that what you have needs to be solved. Like mm-hmm. what I absolutely love there is just like the complete determination that you've both had and the conviction that you are solving a real problem. This is going to be a success. And I think like that leads beautifully onto self-belief and confidence. And I just want to say kudos to you both, because standing in front of VC after VC after VC and being knocked back and knocked back again and again and again would have been enough to knock so many people off their stride. So it is huge. Congratulations. And I just absolutely love that that journey that you've both been through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do just want to share a bit of advice someone gave us recently that has stuck with me so much. And I just think it was an amazing way to frame things. So going back to the point of people not understanding our problem, you know, maybe it isn't a problem. Maybe it's an opportunity. And I think that's what people need to start thinking. As I said, there's the structure that people want to pitch deck, but not everything's a problem, right? Like, world hunger is a problem. If you're creating like a sustainable app that's going to solve climate change, like, that's a problem. Like, sometimes things are an opportunity. If there's a market that's being affected by that, then it's worth solving for. And I feel like as soon as we heard that bit of advice, everything changed for us. Like, we're not going to sit here and say, oh my God, there's so many brands and retailers out there. This is a real problem. But there's an opportunity here that people, you know, and an annoyance and an experience that people are affected by. And we're going to stop that, and we're going to make it easier for that. And so I feel like reframing things that, you know, people are constantly pushing you down on is the most important thing. Yeah, like, find what people see as negatives and turn it into a positive. And that's what's worked for us as well.
Yeah, I think that's such solid advice. And again, just echoing what Pam just said, like, it's so inspiring, honestly. And I think, yeah, it takes a lot of grit, determination, confidence and self-belief to do what you've both done. So absolutely hats off to you both. And I just know it's going to be successful, because I just get this such great energy from you both, that you are so determined. So let's talk about Sorted now, because I really want the listeners to get a real insight into, you know, what is the opportunity? What are you building? And I know we've got a lot of women listening to this right now that would probably want to jump on and download the app immediately. So tell us about Sorted and why it's such a fantastic product that you're building.
Yeah. So at Sorted, we're on a mission to simplify the way we shop online for more informed and efficient purchases. As I said before, there are so many brands and retailers out there, and we found that keeping track of your prospective purchases or even knowing where to begin in the first place is really difficult. It takes a lot of time, and it simply doesn't have to be that way. So we created Sorted to solve this exact problem or opportunity. Our app is a wish list app, which allows people to browse, save and buy all in the one place. You can save items from any online store into your wish list. You can categorize those. You can compare them. You can share your list with friends for advice. And then you can check out once you've found the right product for you. Something that has been really interesting that we're learning from our users is that not only do people, you know, struggle to keep track and jump between tabs, but also how do you know where to begin in the first place? So we've introduced a really exciting new feature called our curated lists, where us along with some stylists and other community figures are creating curated lists for our users so that we can kickstart that shopping journey for them and really give some inspiration depending on, you know, whatever size, style, and price range that you're after.
I love it. This could just go on. I can just visualize it now, how big this could be. Like, it could be absolutely massive, because honestly, like I said to you both at the start, I was doing some online shopping the other day, and I was going back and forth on all these different sites trying to decide, you know, I really want that pair of jeans from that site, but I really want that blouse from that site. The fact that I could just go to one app and do all of my shopping, pay for it, and it would be delivered. What bloody fantastic idea. I'm, you know, pretty time poor these days, you know, running my own business. So that is solving such a problem, but also what an opportunity. So I just think, like, fantastic idea. Where are you sort of, since your funding has come in, like, where are you beginning to sort of like allocate the funding? Like, what's sort of going to be next for Sorted? How are you really going to grow this into the business that, you know, I think we all can see it could be?
Yeah. So, I mean, at the moment, we're focusing solely on user acquisition. Obviously, product cuts into that because our product needs to be at a high standard for the users to love it. But we're really putting our efforts and our funding towards those channels that are going to give us the greatest benefit of users and downloads.
It's really about finding that product market fit still at this stage. So our funding is allocated towards whatever's going to help us get there. So when it comes to acquisition, you know, we're spending a lot of our resources and a lot of our time finding what message is resonating with our users. What do they want to see from us? What is the sell? People are coming into the app expecting to see something. What is that? And how did they know to expect that? And so we're really trying to spend as much time as we can learning from our users, learning where our users are and how do we get them in. At the same time, really working with our technical team to work on our product roadmap and set ourselves up to create a scalable product down the line. And we are really focused on getting to that next fundraising round again. So it's all about setting ourselves up to get as much data as possible, to answer as many big questions as possible and to find product market fit as fast as possible. And we can't get that unless we can communicate with our users and find them and have them testing each iteration of the app mm-hmm. as it comes. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're very focused on.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I'm just actually thinking, like, Georgie and I often talk about how sales is fundamentally one of the core skills that is required in order to really scale any business. And I know a lot of time in terms of, you know, the user experience, the customer, the product market fit, so important. How important do you both feel that sales is in order to start any business? Whose skill set does that fall under? And, you know, even, you know, pitching to VCs, right? You're ultimately selling yourself, you're selling your business, right? And without being able to sell, you've got nothing. Or at least that's what I believe. I know Georgie does as well. Is that what you both believe? How important do you feel that sales has been, you know, to get the business to this point and for the success of a business?
I think we would both agree that it's absolutely fundamental. And we had a conversation last year between ourselves, and we said we were looking at hiring a sales partnership lead and someone with like a lot of e-commerce experience and also connections. And then we sort of sat down and said, hey, wait a minute, we are the business. We came up with this. This is our baby. We should be the face of the business and we should be the people on the ground selling the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think going back to my point before, it's really important to find product market fit and really understand what people need, but you cannot do that unless you know what that sell is, what is resonating with them the most. So it's really, really important to know your story, to know your vision, to know your target audience, and know how to communicate with them. And so pretty much all that we do is try to learn from people and try to tweak ourselves each and every time. Same with VCs. We went out after every single VC pitch, we had takeaways, and we then enacted those into the next one, and so on and so forth. And we've never had a stronger pitch than we've had at the moment. But I imagine, you know, in a year's time, it will be even better. And that's the same with selling the product. You were to see our ads 2 years ago, you know, there was no refinement in the messaging, and each and every iteration is getting stronger and stronger. And so communication is key. Understanding your audience and what resonates with them is really important. But also, as Joe said, us as the founders, like no one believes in this more than you do, and no one can do a better job at selling your business than you can. So I think founder-led sales are really, really important. And that seems to be an opinion across the board with many of the startups that we've spoken to, that founder-led sales are most important because people want to hear from you.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said there. I think, you know, selling yourself, selling your business is just such a fundamental skill when it comes to really getting anything to the next level. So yeah, Pam and I definitely agree on the whole sales pitch, being able to sell yourself. But that comes from a level of confidence. It comes from, you know, having the right mindset. So I'm always fascinated with mindset. I just think it really is like the foundation of success. Like if you don't get this right, like if you didn't have the grit, the determination to just keep on dusting yourself down when you kept on hearing no, you would not be where you are today. So I'd love to know just what each of you do, you know, on those days where you're feeling like, oh, what am I doing? Like, why is this so hard? Like, how do you keep on going on those days where it would be so easy to give up? It would be so easy not to show up. Like, what do you think are the fundamentals that you always do to keep you going and keep yourself motivated and driven to, yeah, keep on going?
I mean, I think that's the best part about having a co-founder in this journey. Mm. Like, they are there to up and vice versa. Like, we were single founders. Oh my God, I would be on the floor crying every day. And not to say that it's not a roller coaster, even with two of us there for each other. But when we do have those down days, it's all about, okay, what can I do to help you? How can I pick you up? How do I get more motivated? And really looking at each other's ways and like habits of being and understanding how we each process things and our reactions. Like if I look at Alexis and I know she's having a bad day, I let her sit in that, and there's no pushing, there's no why aren't you doing this, why aren't you doing that. Like, we're really there for each other.
Yeah, and I think we also allow ourselves time to breathe, right? We went through a stage last year where we had absolutely no work-life balance, and it was just work, 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 work. And we got to a stage where we were like, this is really unsustainable, and we have to find ways to take care of ourselves. And so I think that came with also realizing, you know, not everything needs the very intense sense of urgency as you think it does. So if you're having a really bad day and it's, you know, the afternoon, like, go upstairs and have a nap, you know, or, you know, go for a walk, do what you need to do to take care of yourself, come back up, dust yourself off, and we'll start over again. I think finding ways to take care of yourself, finding those things that make you happy and allowing them into your life. And then really importantly, as Jodine said, in a co-founding relationship, understand, you know, how your co-founder processes things, because that's really important. You know, Joe is amazing with being like, okay, I can see where she's at, so I know exactly what to do, and I do the same with her. But yeah, let me tell you, the roller coaster, like the ups, the highs are high, but the lows are really low. You can wake up feeling like an absolute rock star.
Mm-hmm. We're like walking into the office, high-fiving big people.
Like, we're amazing. And then you go to bed being like, oh my God, like, what are we going to do? Or like, everything's falling apart.
Get one email that just derails the whole.
You know, and that will happen five times in the day. So I always say when people ask me how sorted's going, I'm like, depends on the hour, but really it's that, you know, but then coming back the next hour and you know, getting back into it. So
yeah,
just take care of yourself, really. And no matter what industry you're in, like, you have to take care of yourself, because burnout is real.
Yeah.
And coming back from, you know, an experience of burnout is much harder than just taking a couple of hours off in the afternoon,
yeah,
or giving yourself a sleep in when you need it. It's much easier to do that than to, you know, be recovering from burnout for weeks on end and being really unproductive. Just listen to yourself, listen to your body.
Oh, yeah. I think Pam and I can both relate to everything you're just saying, because, you know, when we first started our business, CH Solutions, which is a recruitment firm, like, we worked 7 days a week. We worked around the clocks. Like, we'd get in, you know, Pam would get her kid to sleep and then she'd be back on it until 10 o'clock. Then we'd wake up and do it all again. And it, look, I think to begin with, right, and I think that intensity is needed. I do believe that at the beginning, you do need to work at a level of intensity to get to a certain point, right? But it is not sustainable. And there comes a point where you actually like, I'm not enjoying this anymore, because this is just all consuming. This is, my whole identity is wrapped up in this. I've got no time for friends, no time for me, no time for anything else. And that is then when you go, I don't actually want to do this anymore. So there's that fine balance between going too intense and trying to sustain it, and actually identifying and having that self-awareness to know, I need to pull back now, or I need to just go and have, like, you know, an afternoon where I go for a walk or go to the beach or just go and just do something away from my laptop, and just understand that, like, it's always going to be there. And just also really try, and I know this is really hard, something I'm still working on, to not identify and put your whole sense of worth into your business and into your career, right? Because if that fails, or if you're having a bad day, that's when you can feel like shit about yourself. And I have been there so many times, and it is just such a awful way of living life. And I think the best piece of advice I ever got was just like, you know, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And just try and see all of those obstacles and those challenging times, opportunities to learn, keep perspective. Like, when you get to the end of your life, you're going to look back and go, did I enjoy myself? What was this all for? Did I have fun? And sometimes when I'm really in it, I just fast forward to like me being like 95, like in a chair and going,
you'll still be running 10K. What are you talking about?
I'm still on the spin bike at 5 a.m. No joking. But you know, like, I just want to look back and go, God, I had a good time. I really did live like a good life and really enjoyed the journey. And sometimes you just need that zoom out approach, because you can be so like in it. I think that's really helped me to be like, come on, keep perspective here.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's definitely, mindset is so, so key when it comes to like a successful life, business, everything. So I completely agree with what you girls have just said. But look, just to sort of like round off today's conversation, because I think like there's just been so many amazing takeaways, and I feel so inspired by what you're doing. Like, what do you think, like, what advice would you give to a woman listening to this now that has got an idea? Maybe it's for a business, maybe it's for, I don't know, just sort of a side hustle. What should she do to begin? Like, what advice would you give just for her to get started?
I think we really need to encourage more women to get involved in entrepreneurship. And that involves taking a risk. And so I think first and foremost, you have to be prepared to do that. And you have to be, you know, you have to know that you are going to face challenges, whether it's access to funding or resources or mentorship. You know, there's a lot of hurdles, but the best way to start is by inserting yourself into startup communities. Go to local events, speak to people you know, and work as hard as you can to surround yourself with an amazing community of like-minded people, because they will be the people who bring you up. I think what's really important for existing female founders as well is to encourage more people to get involved, because, you know, the more people we get involved, the more people we have to move the needle towards, you know, more access to female funding. But there needs to be behavioral change on both, you know, male founders and female founders side to encourage more people to get involved. And I think one thing that a friend said to me recently, you know, be naive enough to start and stubborn enough to finish. You know, go with the trust your gut when you have something that you want to do, and just run with it and take it to the end. because, you know, you're going to face hurdles, but you can get over all of them. We did it.
Yeah. I think it's really important to not put too much pressure on yourself as a female founder to have all the answers, to have everything figured out. I think it's really important that that you know that that's okay, and that even investors think that that's okay. Something that we found that helped us with our success is that we are very personable and we're not the most professional in every single setting or meeting. And so being ourselves really draws people to our personalities, and then they can see the wealth of knowledge that we've gained.
Yeah.
But it's not about being the most professional, smartest person in the room. It's actually about learning from the smartest person in the room.
Failing is okay as well, because you learn more from it. So don't, as Joe said, don't put too much pressure on it. Take the risk, surround yourself with the right people, and encourage more people to come on that journey with you.
And a bestie like I have to start it with.
Yeah. Oh, that's such solid advice. Like hashtag sisterhood club, because sisterhood, because that's what it's all about, right? It really does work. And this is what Pam and I are also really passionate about, is that as women, we need to come together and collaborate more, not compete, not put each other down, actually support other women. What can we do? We all want the same thing. There's enough seats at the table for us all. Let's just keep on bringing other women up, inspiring other women to be the best that they can be. It's something I am so freaking passionate about. And I am sure Pam and I will meet you both in some setting, in some business thing. But I'm so excited to watch this journey unfold. And I can't wait to jump on, download the app and have a play around myself. So thank you for creating it. I know it's going to make my shopping experience a lot better and save me a hell of a lot of time. But Jodine and Alexis, where can we send people to your website, to your socials? Where should we put them?
Yeah, absolutely. You can type in Sorted on the App Store and we'll be there. Android is coming soon, I promise. I'm so sorry to those Android users. And you can type in www.getsorted.co. You can find all of our socials, all our information, and a download link there.
Amazing. We'll make sure we link it all below. But thank you so much for your time today. And yeah, can't wait to catch up with you again soon. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.